A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, handsomes. Did you know that we finally have a weekly comic book podcast on this goddamn network? Serious Issues is all new and all different, hosted by our good friend Levins from the infamous Blink-182 episode and rotating guests from across the Sanspants radio lineup. Up next is episode 1 of the brand new season, and if you like what you hear, you can listen to episode 2, where we talk about Jackson's love of hobos and the beginning of me becoming a Dune boy.
Sanspants Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast. My name is Andrew Levins, and joining me today, I have Joel Zammit and Jackson Bailey.
Hello, hello.
Thank you.
Kings. King and queen.
Yeah, kings and queens.
Of the Sanspants Radio Network.
That is who we are, yeah.
Yeah, I think like dunce and dunce.
Yeah.
The two-head dunces.
So you've probably, you know, if you're familiar with this feed, this podcast, Serious Issues, you've definitely heard my voice way too many times on it. So hearing me at the start, no surprise. Maybe me saying the word weekly for the first time in years comes as a surprise to you. But guess what, everyone? Serious Issues is going to be a weekly comic book podcast again. We started many years ago, and for the longest time, myself and Siobhan Coombs hosted the podcast every single week, and we reviewed sometimes more than 60 single issues of comics per episode.
And Jesus.
No.
Believe it or not, everyone, we burned out.
What? Look, fair call. That's insane.
I'm shocked. Shocked to hear.
So all those episodes exist. You can revisit that era of Serious Issues and wonder how we didn't lose our minds. Or maybe we did. You can let us know if we did.
Your call.
Whenever you like to. But this is season 2. This is all new, all different Serious Issues. We're going to be a weekly podcast again. I'm going to host every episode. Siobhan Coombs will be making appearances when she's able to fit us into her busy work and parenting schedule. Work, parenting, and comic book reading schedule. She's still reading them. Don't worry, everyone. Everyone's worried. She's still reading them. Not 60 a week, but she's still reading them. Previous guests of the podcast, like Connor, will make appearances and others as well. But most excitingly, every single week, I'll be joined by at least one, two, or even three of my favorite folks over at Sanspants. Because, I mean, I know you guys all somehow in amongst, like me, you know, we play too many video games. Mm. What's the other thing that we do?
We do some TV thing.
But also, we read too many comics. We definitely host too many podcasts.
Yes. Do that.
But we all read comics, and I wanted to change the format of this podcast so any of us can come on and do this podcast. You guys, Jackson and Zammit, both host a podcast called Thumb Cramps, along with Joel Dusha, who will also be appearing on Serious Issues, and the format of that podcast is each of them talk about a video game that they've been playing that week, every week. And I thought, hey, that makes just as much sense as that for comic books.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's not 60 games in a week.
Yeah, exactly. God, that would be insane.
The longest podcast ever. It just never stops recording. You finish the 60th and then you hit start on the next episode.
It's just doing 60, like reading 60 comics in a week is very reminiscent of when I used to like collect hard copy, like floppies of comics.
Oh yeah, I was doing that, yeah.
I think I got to a point where I definitely burnt maybe one or two comic book shops where they had like a pull order that I just ghosted.
Oh, that's...
So I can only imagine like thick stack of comic books that they're like, he's coming back, right? Yeah. He's going to be here.
He will buy these comics.
He wants these variants.
Then at some point they're going to be like, let's put them on the shelf. Let's put them on the shelf.
Let's put them in the dollar bin. We recorded from King's Comics in Sydney, which still exists. You can check them out at kingscomics.com. And I think it was being at the store, seeing all the comics on the shelf, and them going, "Yeah, just borrow whatever you want." And almost it was like that, you know, which comics do you want to borrow, Levins? Yes. And just reading
kid at a candy store.
Oh, no, that's dangerous.
Yeah. And like, especially because I swear if you go back and listen to those old episodes, I'm like, oh, I hated this. Oh, I definitely hated this. This comic destroyed my soul.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Marvel and DC put out way too many comics every single week.
Absolutely.
So that's where the majority of my burnout came from. So I mostly read manga these days, but occasionally we'll read the odd highly recommended superhero or other crime comic books are one of my favorites, and I think we share an interest in that, Jackson.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you're familiar with many, many long episodes of Sans Pants podcast, particularly episodes of Plumbing the Death Star, you'll know that Zammit is a huge freak for X-Men. Most Marvel.
yes.
And there have been times, I know I've heard you stop yourself from ranting about the current state of certain superhero comics.
Definitely always feels like standing on a landmine with Zammit. You're like, you have just an idle, simple question where you're like, what's, I don't know, Professor X up to these days? And then he opens his mouth and you're wanted a one sentence answer, but...
I wish I was talking about 60 video games right now. So this is an outlet for Zammit now too, and Jackson as well, and Dusha, and I reckon Tom Walker reads comics.
Yeah.
And a plethora of Sans Pants radio hosts will now appear on Serious Issues. But most importantly, it's weekly again. We'll be reviewing less comics overall, but there'll be more episodes and therefore more content. More could you want?
Well, yeah. What do you want from us? This is what you're getting.
Yeah, leave us alone. Stop yelling at
this
me.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
Be happy.
I get to talk about X-Men, and I'm pretty happy with that.
Sometimes I feel like I treat the listeners like I'm like a bad dad at a birthday party, and I'm like, why aren't you smiling? It's happy. Blow the candles out. You're liking the party, aren't you?
You're liking it. So put down the video game. Kid always
put
on
away
the phone.
Your Game Boy. Come on.
Experience the world.
Dance with Grandma.
You know? This is what the podcast is now. Just you guys yelling and me forgetting what we were talking about before you started yelling. So on the podcast today, Zammit, you're going to review Planet Size X-Men.
Yes.
A single issue of the comic that came out a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Jackson, what are you reviewing?
I'm going to review, I think only three issues are out at the moment, but it's a comic called Sarah Jewell and the House of Lost Horizons, which is a Dark Horse comic set in the Hellboyverse.
Excellent.
So that's what I'll be looking at.
And I'll be reviewing a manga series called Toratan, Birds of a Feather.
Ooh.
Let's get right into it, Zammit. Tell me about Planet Size X-Men.
Well, so Planet Size X-Men, I think, is, as we all know, play on, I guess, Giant Size X-Men, where back in the 70s, when they were trying to, I guess, revamp the series, they decided to get the five original X-Men. They chuffed them off to an island somewhere. So we got the brand new, all different, all exciting X-Men all from around the world. We've got Colossus and Nightcrawler, Wolverine, all your old favorites. Thunderbird, he died pretty quickly.
Who's Thunderbird?
Sounds like a spread.
Thunderbird, he died in like almost the next issue. He was like a Native American mutant. They were like, let's chuck him on, kill him off.
I don't need to worry about Thunderbird is what I'm hearing.
And again, it was a big shakeup of the status quo. That Storm there, Banshee, so you got like Ireland, Africa, all the different
fabulous
nations in the world have mutants. And so with Planet-Sized X-Men, it's another big shakeup of the status quo that is the current X-Men, I guess, storytelling, because again, in the last year, maybe two, X-Men have just had this giant revamp, because boy howdy did it get silly and stupid and bad. Mm-hmm. We had the Age of X-Men, which was just terrible, and then
yeah,
what
please
came
tell
after
me
that,
what's the lowest point that you have in it as an X-Men
great
reader?
Question
lowest point, I mean there's so many, you know.
that's grim to hear. That's a stone cold bomber, man.
There's just so much garbage that just kind of gets produced. Like, oh, what's this? Oh, no. I think Avengers. No, sorry, not Avengers. Inhumans versus X-Men was pretty bad.
Like, yeah, we covered that. That was like one of the last things we covered before we stopped being weekly.
Yeah. There again, it was just this terrible time in Marvel's history where they're like, we don't own the rights for the movies for X-Men, but we do own Inhumans, so we're gonna push Inhumans a lot, and no one cares.
Yeah.
But they still tried their damnedest to the point where they're like, okay, it's not working. What if we actively killed off the X-Men because it was the Inhumans' fault, but made the X-Men the villains?
Wow.
And people were still like, no, we still hate this.
Well, because were they like, okay, you don't care about, we need you to care about the Inhumans. Yeah. So Wolverine's dead, and now you care about Blackagar Boltagon.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
That's what you should be caring.
There were some genuinely good Inhumans comics at the time, but like, you have one of the strongest fan bases ever in X-Men readers.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. We were revolted. Never,
yeah, exactly. You revolted.
Yeah.
We're like, no, I'm not having any of this. I'm not doing it. Like, Blackagar Boltagon was like, okay, we're going to release the Terrigen Mist all over the world so that, you know, people who may or may not be Inhumans or who don't know that can become Inhumans, which is basically like mutants. You know, it just happens randomly. And we're like, nope, still don't care. Okay, what if the same mist killed mutants? And we're like, that we really don't like that. And
that's
then it
so
just got
transparent.
Worse. Wow. So that was
I think also around the same time Black Bolt died.
Probably, yeah.
So the X-Men and Black Bolt died at around the same time.
And they killed off Cyclops, which was beautiful as well.
They killed off all of the Jamie Maddox, the Madrixes.
Mm-hmm. It was one of my like favorite characters of the X-Men franchise. So that was pretty
a
big
lot of
low
him to
point.
Kill. Hmm? There's a lot of him to kill.
Yeah, oh, so many.
That doesn't sound
so
easy.
So that was low. But also, again, the story that happened just before Hickman just came on and was like, we're just revamping it, because they just felt like it's our last hurrah. And so they tried to cram a lot of 90s X-Men bullshit into the comics. And I was like, who is this for? Me? Thank you.
Yeah.
But they did it in such a bad way. Like, Magneto appears, and everyone's like, who's this guy? And they're like, oh, it's Joseph. You remember Joseph? And I was like, I do! No one else should.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
How many X-Men comics do you reckon, like, single issues of X-Men comics do you think you've read over the years?
Would be up in the thousands, I think.
Wow.
Is there a period that you haven't read?
So I didn't read from, I want to say like the Hope side, like when Hope came into it.
Yep.
Who is the, I guess daughter of Cable, or like the adopted daughter of Cable. So, after that's sort of when I dropped off the face of X-Men, where I'm like, I've had enough. This just seems like it was a bit of a high, because it was like the Messiah complex, and it's like a bit of a high. The art was really good. The storyline was somewhat coherent. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to get this for a while again. So I think this is a good, you know, just dropping off point.
Would you ever go back and read the comics you missed?
I have.
All the Jason Aaron stuff that kind of came out of that. He started on Wolverine shortly after Messiah Complex, I think.
Okay.
That's good.
Somehow I find the X-Men just really exhausting. I don't know why.
Why? Me too.
What part of the last 10 minutes?
I find out recently that Mystique had a kid with Xavier, but also had a kid with Wolverine, and they were like into the far future, but then they came back to the past to like screw things up, and it was a slog to get through.
X-Men, as well as having like one of the most insanely large character rosters, also some of the most insane time travel hijinks as well.
Yeah.
It's a bold combination.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of like the original, like what Cable did and all him like going to the future to kind of fix his techno-organic virus. But then you're like, okay, yeah, he's into the future and he comes back. But then they're like, what if we fuck it up more and Jean Grey and Cyclops go into the future anyway, but not as Jean Grey and Cyclops, but they'll call themselves Red and Slim. They'll raise him, but they won't tell him that they're actually his actual parents. He won't figure that out for a while. Anyway, he's back now.
Oh, God. It always feels like I'm at a party full of people I don't really know, and I'm like, I don't know how to interact with any of these people, and I'm hearing all of their drama, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So who had a kid? I don't know that guy, but I'm excited. That sounds nice.
It's a beautiful soap opera that I love and adore.
Fair enough.
So recently they've just revamped X-Men to be the best it's ever been in a long, long time. Thank you for Hickman coming in and being like, let's just reboot. Let's just do some good soft rebooting, hard rebooting. Who gives a fuck? There's like things you remember. We might include them. Things you might not. Who cares? They might be the forgotten years or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they've just been like, right. So after this, all this bullshit that happened with setting up, so the mutants now live in an island called Krakoa.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this called X of Swords crossover, which involves like otherworld and magic and bullshit. And the big takeaway there is that there was another island, a living island. Krakoa is a living island. There's a second living island called Aroka.
Uh-huh.
And the two of them once were a planet, right?
Yes. Either a big planet or a big island. It's all to do with apocalypse.
What was the combination of Krakoa and Aroka called?
Oh, God. Yeah, you're testing my memory.
Krakoraka. Surely it was called Krakoraka. Surely. Tell me it was called Krakoraka.
Let's say yes.
Yes. That's awesome news.
And yeah, like when Apocalypse was first around, his first horseman. So Apocalypse,
I know he's got four horsemen.
Big blue dude, and yep. He's got like horsemen of like whatever. And his wife mm-hmm. was also there. And they're like, there was some bullshit that went down by like a being called Annihilation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we've got to stop these people from invading. And so they're like, right, my horsemen and my wife, you go in there and I'll stay out here and protect what is now Earth, and Aroka goes in there. And so you've had like millennia of evolution where these mutants in particular, who grew up in Aroka, they are basically hardened by war because they're constantly fighting. And so they're like more of a hardened race.
Okay.
Anyway, long story short, that island now got transported to Earth.
Uh-huh.
So now you have Krakoa and Aroka
uh-huh.
kind of joined together. Anyway! Because sure. now you have these like million more mutants have just popped up for no reason. Everyone's like, that's sus.
Mm.
But because they're more of a warlike mutant and they've sort of grown up where like, you know, survival of the fittest.
Exactly. Yeah. Thing,
they're just kind of like causing a bit of problems around Earth. So then Magneto has an idea to be like, right, let's terraform Mars and give it to them, and that Mars can be the new, I guess, capital of the Sol system, and and basically that can be where we're claiming Mars for mutantdom. And so planet-sized X-Men.
Ah, the planet is Mars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It okay. involves gathering all the Omega-level mutants. So the Omega-level mutants, of course, being
sure.
mutants who have basically just have like the upper limit of their particular power. So you've got Magneto because he can do shit with magnets.
Mm-hmm.
That's real great. You've got Storm. Who can yeah. do shit with, like, weather. You got Vulcan, who does shit with, like, I don't know, volcanoes maybe, I don't
Earth.
Know.
Yeah, yeah.
What You've got man. Hope.
Yeah.
Iceman, he does molecular manipulation with his ice.
Yeah.
You've also got Hope, who can kind of, like, boost everything. And you've got a couple of, like, telekinetic and telekinesis people as well.
Sure.
Basically, they all come together, and you've got, like, Exodus. You all come together, and they're like, right, we're going to reality bend and all this stuff to finally make Mars habitable, and they do it.
Okay.
And it's a great comic. I love it so much. The artwork in this one in particular is just beautiful.
So it's this is written by Jerry Duggan with art by Pepe Larraz. Larraz has done majority of the reboot art.
Mm-hmm,
he's
mm-hmm,
one of the more prominent artists in this current run of X-Men. And Jerry Duggan, he's in writing Marauders,
yes.
one of the new recent X-Men books, and Wolverine. Are they his two books or Cable? I can't remember one of them.
I think it was Wolverine, and like yeah, I think Hallions.
No,
all
no,
like
Wolverine is Benjamin Percy. So I think yeah, Duggan's been doing Cable and Marauders.
Mm. So yeah, all the new X books are just like some of them are a lot better than others, and I think like when they first launched them, there were a couple of like I would say near misses, like Fallen Angels,
pretty short
which was
run.
Like. Yeah. yeah, short run, and thankfully it was a short run because it was not very good. But like a few of them, like Hellions or Hellions in particular, is like one of my personal favorites. So yeah, so they've just decided to terraform Mars, basically do what like humans will do in several generations to be like, we're doing it in 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's again setting up this status quo. They get the reality bender, Jamie Madrix, not Jamie Madrix, sorry, Jamie Braddock.
Yep.
And who is currently king of one of the other world realms.
Yep.
And they're like, hey, we have an idea.
We're going to have a wild weekend with us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come up over here. We need your help.
Come over.
We need a reality bender. And they're like, I've got an idea for, because when they do everything, they're like, we're missing a something. We're missing like maybe a protection of this new Mars. They're like, hey, we're going to give you an idea and you're going to give birth to that idea. And he takes it literally. There's a bit of an empreg in X-Men, which is great. He gets a big old belly and then he births a giant sword, as in
S-W-O-R-D,
a sword station.
That a huge Jean space Grey, station.
Yeah. That's Jean Grey has to chuck into the so atmosphere as it gets big.
Magneto catches it with his magnetic powers.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's so good.
My lord.
And this is all happening at the Hellfire Gala, which is like their very first, like the mutantdom being like, we're going to have a big old ball. Mm-hmm. And I think some of you might have seen some of the wacky costumes the X-Men were wearing Hellfire Gala. And this was them showing off to the world, flexing their might, flexing their money, flexing their powers. And also, fuck you, we've terraformed Mars as their big sort of like grand finale, which is like got some ramifications happening in all the other X-Books. Because everyone's like, well, fuck, I guess.
It's kind of a big deal. It's kind of, probably gonna affect some things.
I mean, it's just, it's setting up that status quo. And I really like the reason why they're doing like all this from like, you know, Magneto's perspective, being like, hey, Orokians, you're a bit violent. Let's just give you a whole planet to deal with and we'll go from there. Because otherwise you're going to cause some strife down on Earth. And it's interesting seeing like how they're doing and what they're playing with, because again, when you look at like kind of mutantdom in the Marvel universe, they've always been like, humans, we hate them.
Yeah,
I wish they'd fuck off. And so now they're basically, well, we're fucking off to our own island, and then we're fucking off to a different planet, and the humans still not happy.
It does feel like a huge status quo change, like maybe the biggest ever that's happened sort of like to mutants in comics. I mean, like, that's a huge claim, but it feels
I would say
big.
With Krakoa and then this, it's just kind of like the 1-2 punch of kind of like really shaking up what mutants are, because they've really kind of been stagnant for the longest time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like there's so many, like how many stories can we get where it's like, humanity hates and fears the X-Men because they're different.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh yeah, Cyclops, he shoots fucking lasers out of his eyes. But Captain America, we love him.
He's just strong. That's not scary. Yeah.
Captain America has a cameo in this, in the closest thing to conflict this issue has. What I liked about the issue the most is there's no fighting in it. It is just it's just a whole comic about terraforming Mars.
Yeah, that is great.
Captain America calls Cyclops to the now like dilapidated, like uninhibited X-Mansion. And he's like, hey, so there's like a million more mutants on the world now. What are you going to do about it? And then Cyclops is like, just you wait. And then that's the end of the scene.
And Captain's like, yeah, I'll wait. Okay. That sounds good.
Sure.
All right, good.
It'd be so funny, like writing like a street level, like, you know, writing like a Luke Cage comic at Marvel right now. Because you have to have like, you know, obviously people in the world are going to be talking about the fact that like a mutant race just terraformed Mars.
Yeah. It's kind of a big deal.
And I really like the hints to other things as well that are sort of going on the wider sort of like Marvel universe. Cause they reference, I think it's like Makeda, who is like this mutant that really only ever appeared in like a run of X Factor, like just in like during like the 198 days where he disappears into like a bunch of butterflies at some point, I think, from memory.
Sure.
Anyway,
you remember the 198 days, Jackson?
Yeah, do I? Don't you? When there was only 198 mutants left,
he became butterflies, Levins. This doesn't make sense to me.
After Wanda said no more mutants, you know, remember that.
I do remember that. I mean, I don't remember that, but I know of it.
This was after they make the House of M series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where mutantdoms, you know that thing, and like Magneto becomes like king of all the lands.
Sure.
And they realize it's a reality thing, and then unfortunately Magneto kind of lashes out and kills Pietro, which is why you remember all this.
I remember all of it. Absolutely. 198 or whatever.
And they're only reduced to like only 198 mutants. Anyway, so they they reference him to be like, oh, we need a reality bender, and they're like, well, you know, he's not around to sort of help us out. They reference Legion, Xavier's son. They're like, he's a bit too unstable at the moment, so we don't trust him. And they reference Franklin Richards, to be like, powerhouse.
Fuck Franklin Richards.
And he's like, yeah, he's not family anymore. Which, again, I'm not sure what's going on with Franklin Richards in Fantastic Four. I think he's no longer a mutant. I know he definitely has gone from a blonde to... dark hair, which is interesting, well, okay. I guess.
Goth face.
Yeah. He's dyed his hair or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's a great little comic. Do not read it stand alone. It will be confusing.
This feels like I couldn't just read this comic.
No,
I would
no.
be go back to lost.
House of X and Powers of X, and then just continue from there.
Yeah, literally every single X-Men comic book, read them from that moment,
except Fallen Angels. You'll you don't need to read Fallen Angels.
I'm not going to read any of them, Lovis. That's the trick.
You don't need to. You've got to zam it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just yell at
your beck and call.
The room.
I'll just yeah, I could get it all by osmosis. So I've got a vague understanding of everything that's happening. Yeah.
But no, it's a great step forward for mutantdom. I'm a big fan of what's going on. We got to meet some of the other mutants from Oroka, who was like, one was this giant caterpillar lad who just kind of like splurts and like almost explodes themselves to kind of chew up the dirt to make it more habitable. You've got some giant unit who is this like tall fish guy.
Oh.
He cuts himself and he's like, right, that's gonna be my blood's gonna be the water on Mars, and it does.
Okay.
And you got someone who just teleports the giant external portal, which is of course the external portal made from the bones of the external mutants,
who are the immortal mutants.
They kill them and they make
course,
the bones of the
course.
This, so they can track. Yeah, you know.
You don't
and
even need to explain it to me.
And so they can teleport to and from the island. So what a great little comic book. Highly recommend it. It is... if you were a fan of X-Men in the past and you've fallen off and you're like, do I dabble back into it? Yes, 100%. You start with House of X, Powers of X. Because otherwise, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I want to know what the tipping point is, though, because at the moment, like, death doesn't matter because they've figured out a way how to reincarnate any mutant.
Yes.
They've terraformed Mars. They have their own island. At some point, is it all going to come crashing down, do you think? Or do we think this is the status quo forever now?
I think the moment X-Men enter the MCU, just like how when we had the movies of old and how they affected the comic books, and we had like a dirty Wolverine in just a leather jacket with no shirt underneath, we're going to have that same effect onto comic books.
Yeah, sure.
So the moment the MCU introduces X-Men as whatever they are, whatever that is, will influence X-Men, and then they'll have a big reboot.
Yeah, because it'll be a
reality-shifting moment.
Yeah, right, I can't jump into this absolute nonsense you've been describing. Or like, I can't watch the X-Men movie where it's just like, if it's the original six or five or whatever.
Five, Jackson, come on.
Excuse me. And they're, you know,
198,
around.
Jackson.
Yeah, 198. The X-Men are
now name them.
Their bones are portals or something. And then jump into this shit. It would be so confusing. Which is unfortunate, I think. As much as the X-Men confuse and terrify me, it's cool that they're getting weird with it. That's always going to be better than playing it safe. So.
Well, yeah, like this is like a long history of X-Men getting weird with it because like there were so many like, if you look at X-Men stories of past, they're like, we're chuffing off to space and we're having affairs with bird aliens. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're like, hey, we're in a fantasy land and one of my kids a dragon now.
Yeah.
And like, that's pretty cool. So like, again, X-Men can go all over the place. They're like, you know what's cool? What if like a giant alien laid an egg in me and I gave birth to that alien? That'd be scary.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so, they just kind of kept really changing a lot of shit in the X-Men back in the day. And, like, with, like, Claremont in, like, Burns' run, it was just kind of, like, all these, like, cool ideas and all these things were happening. And it's just more and more as it kept going and people were like, no, let's kind of keep this the same and keep it stagnant. And you have, like, that problem of, like, Wolverine in every single, like, basically issue of the 90s where just things became very, very samey. And it will be disappointing when they reboot this. I will be sad, but I'll get over it and keep reading the filth that is X-Men. And I will enjoy it, because that is the curse of me.
And I'll let you talk about it once a month.
Yes! Yes! I'll be so happy. Lucky. So, yes, no, a beautiful book. I don't know, idea 10 out of 10. I don't know what rating would do it either way, or if it's just like a big thumbs up or a big thumbs down. But this gets like two big thumbs up from me.
That's good.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So we're going to move from the House of X to the House of Lost Horizons.
That's true.
Sarah Jewel mystery number one. Jackson, yeah. Tell us about it.
So I'm a massive fan of the Hellboy comics, Mike Mignola's sort of like Hellboy verse. One of the things I really love about this series is that, you know, obviously you have the main Hellboy run, but it loves to do this thing where it will idly mention a character, and then all of a sudden that character will get their own, like, you know, massive run of comics, which I know is pretty typical for, like, you know, your superhero thing, whatever. If a character's popular, you're going to get a comic, but I think it's rarer with the kind of, like, horror comics or the, whatever you would call the sort of, like, Hellboy series, because I don't know if it really typically, sort of, like, is what you'd call a superhero series. Mm. Anyway, so one character that they mentioned years ago was a character named Sarah Jewel, and she is like idly mentioned maybe offhand by a character in one of the Sir Edward Grey Witchfinder comics, and then in one of the later runs of that, I mean, those comics are incredible, in one of the later and not very good comics she makes her first debut. And then I think there was some announcement like, oh, we're gonna get a bunch of Sarah Jewel sort of like comics, or at least a run, and maybe a couple more after that. And finally it's been released, and it's effectively like a kind of Miss Marple or a sort of like Agatha Christie, like locked house mystery, sort of like a Poirot sort of thing, but set within that Hellboy universe, which is a kind of sort of a comic that I didn't think would work almost. Like I thought that was the kind of thing that might end up being like too wordy or too difficult to convey onto the page. But it's done spectacularly well. I'm so invested. The Sarah Jewel is a, I guess like an occult detective is the idea. Like so many characters within the Hellboy universe. And I think this one is set in the 1950s, maybe, or the 1960s. And the premise is that she is on a mansion on an island with a bunch of other people because somebody has died, and basically they're trying to figure out who. But the sort of twist is like he died in a supernatural way, but he was also a collector of supernatural artifacts. And now they're like, well, which one of these artifacts could be the cause of his death, and how do the people who are also staying at this mansion sort of play into it? Only 3 issues are out at the moment, but it's, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I think recently with these sort of like stories in the Hellboy verse, because I don't know when it was, but like a couple of years ago they wrapped up the arc of Hellboy is finished.
Yep. Hellboy and Hell.
Yeah, Hellboy in Hell, and then the end of Hellboy in Hell, and then even the end of BPRD Hell on Earth, or I think it was called The Devil You Know, which like entirely wrapped up the very end of the world. And so like that's all finished, and now they're kind of going back and they're doing like, well, these are the sort of like interstitial stories that were also happening in the background. And I think that's done a kind of a weird thing for Hellboy comics where they have to start, what am I trying to say here? So like, back in the day, before we knew the ultimate outcome of the world, you could have stuff where you're like, oh, we're clearly building to this grand finale. But they've done the grand finale now, and everything that was going to build to it has built to it. And that means that any comic set in this universe now has to build to something that was also happening. And I think that's kind of caused some weird stuff. So, like, they've started releasing a bunch of just Hellboy in the BPRD sort of short-run comics. So they had...
Maybe like five issues at a time, right? And they always have really amazing art teams on them.
Oh, yeah. Some of them rule. Like, the Seven Wives Club was great. And I think they're doing a kind of like haunted house one at the moment, which is really fun as well, because somehow in Hellboy's entire run, he's never just come up against ghosts. So like, which is so shocking. But I guess he's always fighting like a big vampire or like a golem or whatever. So this time it's just like a haunted house mystery. So those are really fun, but they have to be quite self-contained. And even like some of those, so I think there was one recently called The Return of Effie Kolb, which is a sequel to a really good Hellboy comic where a witch at the end gets turned into a horse.
That's a great one. Yeah,
it's awesome. So there's a sequel comic to that where Hellboy is returning and Effie Kolb, who was the witch
ride the horse?
No, unfortunately not. She's gotten out. She's not a horse anymore. It's a bummer. But it's full of these weird little hints to like, so like he meets this young girl and the young girl, she can draw on a piece of paper and what she draws comes to life. And in the end, it's hinted that she's going to go to like an evil magic school in Boston. Huh. And you're like, well, that's, I guess you're setting up future stuff, but it just feels very, because we've seen the entirety of Hellboy's story, these ones that are like, oh, we're furthering Hellboy's story, they feel a bit strange or whatever. But I mean, I'm always excited to see what happens. They're still good comics.
The way you're describing it sort of sounds like, 'cause I know you recommended quite a lot of Hellboy stuff.
They are all good. Well, they're not all good, but most of them are.
And you recommended me a couple months ago, Joe Gollum.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like, I got kind of like just powered through all them. And it's a sort of similar premise there.
For sure.
What you're describing.
Well, yeah, Joe Gollum, because Joe Gollum is set in the Outerverse, which is Mike Mignola's other supernatural. Like, it's so funny because it's basically the same idea more or less. It's just like, well, let's play with this alternate history or whatever. But yeah, so you can see definitely the same themes are there, and Joe Gollum has the beauty of being like, well, this story's not finished yet, so we can lead to something grand. Although I must say, a lot of the new Outerverse comics I really don't like for some reason. Lady Baltimore, just not for me. Frenetic. I don't know, just jumped me in, and I was like, everyone's talking, who is anyone? Please slow down. So maybe it'll get better. I don't know.
The House of Lost Horizons was written by this guy called Chris Robertson, and he wrote one of my favorite Hellboy tie-ins, The Visitor, How and Why He Stayed.
Oh, that's an incredible tie-in.
It's like about an alien. Good. Yeah, very good fun.
An alien with a wife. Wow. But yeah, so it's really well paced. It's done a great job of introducing these characters that are all staying in the mansion with Sarah Jewell in a way that isn't overwhelming and is just giving you a little, quite unlike Lady Baltimore, there's no freneticness to it. You're kind of slowly introduced so you can get to learn who these characters are, so that the ultimate sort of like the classic Agatha Christie like reveals of like, oh, well, here's this secret this character had, or here's this secret this character had, can come at you in a kind of like at an appropriate pace. Which makes it all the more intriguing. And Sarah Jewell is such a fun character that I'm sort of surprised they hadn't done anything with kind of yet, because I know that Mike Mignola, he talks about a lot of the characters that he has in the sort of, I guess, spin-off, so to speak, Hellboy comics, as like, he's always loved this genre and he wants to kind of like play around within that setting. So like Sir Edward Grey Witchfinder is because he loved like the Carnacki, that sort of like occult Victorian detective. So he's like, well, I'll do an occult Victorian detectives comic. And his Lobster Johnson comics are because he's like, well, I love that like 1940s pulp adventure comic, so I'll do my sort of own version of this. And I feel like Sarah Jewell is like, well, I love that Agatha Christie, Poirot, locked room, sort of
Cluedo.
Like Cluedo. Yeah, so this is my version of that. I'm just really enjoying it. Sarah Jewell is like this kind of brash American occult detective, which is a really nice change of pace from a lot of the other characters, I think, as well, especially in that setting. It's really good. It's like, it's not trying to tie into anything larger. There's no like, whoa, this is a big mystery, this is a big epic story. It's just like a fun little murder mystery on a spooky island mansion. And yeah, I'm really into it. So I recommend it. If you're looking for, like, you're like, oh, Hellboy comics, I'd like to get into them, but there's so many of them, and clearly there's this massive story going, I want something more self-contained. It's a really great one to pick. It's also one of the very few Hellboy comics with, like, a female lead, so that's good about it as well. So if you want to jump into it for that reason, there you go. But yeah, I recommend it.
And you can just read this just by itself, self-contained?
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh.
You don't need to know much else about the Hellboy universe.
I don't know how I feel.
Yeah, yeah. There's no, nobody's terraforming Mars. It's just human beings. And,
self-contained.
And maybe a ghost.
You can make sense and just...
You can definitely make this as convoluted. I think if you try hard enough, you could make this confusing and convoluted.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure
I believe in you. So the art for this was also done by Layla Del Duca, who did the art on one of our favorite comics on Serious Issues a few years ago called Sleepless, an book about... it was like a... like a period piece about where like the every castle is protected by a man who doesn't sleep.
That's cool.
A beautiful romance story. And the colors are by Michelle Madsen, who she did the colors for a great book called Lady Killer and tons of other stuff for DC and Dark Horse. But yeah, great creative team on that one.
Yeah, for sure. And it really shows. Like it's a really tight, solid comic. Which is great. I think I just found it particularly refreshing because a lot of the other Mignola books that I'd read recently, I found a little bit disappointing. So I was like, oh, great. Like, even some of the later, the most recent Witchfinder, where we find out about Jack the Ripper in Mike Mignola's universe, which is something they've been setting up all the time. Every time they mention Sir Edward Grey, they're like, oh, yeah, he was the Queen's Witchfinder until that business with the Ripper. And you're like, what the fuck happened with Jack the Ripper? Because it must have been crazy. And then you read it and you're like, that was a bad comic. Wow, how horribly disappointing after all of that buildup. So I found Sarah Jewell really refreshing, and I really recommend it.
Fantastic. So we've terraformed Mars. We've ventured into the House of Lost Horizons. Now it's time to have sex with a Birdman.
Yay!
It does shock me how much we don't like manga anime.
I know.
Well, that does sound appealing.
Sex with a Birdman sounds awesome.
One of the ulterior motives of this podcast is to get Jackson reading more manga. And maybe you too, Zamet. Last year, I reviewed on the podcast the first book in a series called Toratan, Birds of a Feather, by a writer named Kotetsuko Yamamoto. And this is a manga series. The second volume came out. It's published by Viz, and it is part of their imprint, which is called BL Sublime. And do you guys know what BL stands for?
No.
Be lucky.
Yep. It stands for Boys Love. And this is a genre of manga which is almost predominantly written by women and that explores the love between two men. And as someone always looking to expand my horizons, I thought, sure, I'll give a romance book about two men a go, read something different. I've read a couple and they've all been pretty enjoyable. Most of them have been pretty down the middle, kind of like romance stuff. So I picked up Toratan, Birds of a Feather, and straight away we meet a aspiring private detective who is not good at his job, so he is just a kind of like a jack of all trades who does odd jobs around the neighborhood. His name is Unasaki, and pretty early on in the book, we learn that he has the ability to talk to birds.
Okay.
And it is an ability that he hates because birds don't shut the fuck up ever. Anyway, one day he meets a crow and he falls in love with the crow.
That's fair. Crows are smart. Okay.
That's not what I expected.
And so this crow is really suave. He plays by his own rules. Mm-hmm. And the first volume of Toratan, Birds of a Feather actually made a pretty convincing argument as to why one would fall in love with a crow.
Wow.
Quick question.
Yes.
Can the crow understand the boy as well?
Yeah, no, they can talk to each other.
There's
a great, the best thing about manga is that, like, and obviously comics too, but particularly manga will have, like, the dialogue box and then you'll have, like, what the characters are thinking.
Yeah.
So, like, pretty early on in this book, he's like, is this crow flirting with me? And I was just like, oh, God, this is so much fun. thinking you're going to get, like, just a regular romance book and then finding out it's about, like, a man falling in love with a bird. Unbelievable.
Yeah, spectacular.
Anyway, so I was very excited for Volume 2 to show up.
Fair.
And I have some bad news.
Oh, no.
Volume 2, Kuro the Crow is not in this volume because we learn that another boy in the neighborhood that Unasaki met in Volume 1 has the power to take over the minds of birds. So he entered the mind of a crow to flirt with someone, and neither of them, they're like, while Inosaki has more experience, he's been out for longer. His pursuer, Mitsuru, he's not out yet, and so he is looking to have his first experiences with a man. And he does this by taking over the mind of a crow and flirting with him because he's able to communicate with birds.
That rules.
Did he know? Like, or was it just like, I'm just going to control this bird and, oh, lucky me.
Yeah, this guy can talk to birds.
No, exactly. So he would use his power. He can only use it for a few minutes at a time. And one day when he's like, you know, basically checking a guy out as a bird, the guy Inosaki offers him some dried squid that he's eating.
Yeah.
And the two begin a conversation that ends up them forming a relationship. What was great about the first volume, though, and I missed it so much, is that, like, you had these scenes where, like, he's lying in bed at the end of the day being like, oh, I wish that bird would call me. And, like, just contemplating his, like, feelings. Not only because, like, one, it's weird for, you know, interspecies romantic feelings strange. To exist, but also this is a species that he, for his entire life, since as long as he had this power to talk to them, has hated. So the idea of falling in love with something that he hates the most, it was a compelling read.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So the second book is it's revealed that, like, yeah, like his pursuer knows that he can talk to birds, and also his pursuer can take over the minds of birds. And so it's about them having, like, an awkward start to their relationship. And eventually the Mitsuru gets into college, and Inosaki promises to him that they'll finally have sex the day that he gets into college. And so he gets into college, they have sex, and then the book and the series is over now.
Oh, what?
I mean, look, it's kind of nice that he gets to make love to a human man as opposed to a crow. But it's weird. He feels like he's being, like, magically catfished.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't feel ethical for some reason.
It's like I fell in love with a crow.
Yeah, literal I didn't fall crow, in love with a man. I fell in love with a crow man.
It's the same issue I have with Beauty and the Beast when Beast goes into, like, that foppish blonde boy.
Oh,
I'm like,
man, that made me so mad when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's not who I fell in love with.
Beast.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like a hairy man, this smooth boy.
What a shame.
I fell in love with the feathered crow.
Yeah.
Not this smooth boy.
It must have been such a shame for you as well, Levins, to be like, I've been convinced by this comic that he should be in love with a crow, and then almost for the comic to turn around and be like, you idiot, of course he shouldn't be in love with a crow, he should be in love with a man who is in a crow, you know?
Yeah, but yeah, a wild roller coaster.
Sounds like it.
You know, it sounds ridiculous to recap it, but there are, like, you know, really well conveyed emotions in this book through the writing and the art, which is just, you know, it's that really nice, effortless kind of, like, slice of life, conversational artwork that really is well suited to a book like this. Yeah, again, the story and art is by Kotetsuko Yamamoto, and she's apparently got a bunch of other series on the way, so I will be looking out for her books. Look, if anyone has a recommendation for a book where a man actually does consummate his love with a crow.
With a crow? Yeah, exactly.
I have been playing a lot of the video game Death's Door, where you are a crow with a sword. He doesn't get fucked either. Yeah. So,
true.
I think we've all been playing that game quite a lot.
Yeah, and I've not noticed any sex happening to the protagonist of Death's Door.
I'm just saying, look, creators, maybe 2022 is the year of crow sex.
Yeah, I think it should be.
Phase 5 of the MCU. Every character fucks a crow.
Every character is fucking crows.
Loden's got them two ones under his eyes or whatever.
That's true. It would be a drastic change from the current MCU's run, but I think audiences would
appreciate.
Yeah, I think they'd come to understand.
Well, you can let us know which popular superheroes you'd like to see enter romantic relationships with crows in 2022. We have a Facebook group, facebook.com/group/serious issues podcast with a few thousand people in it. And if you want to talk about the podcast in there, I'd love that. We also have a Sans Pants Radio Discord with a Serious Issues channel in it. You can talk about the podcast and comics in general, including recommending comics for us to try in the future, especially if they have crows in them. You can catch Zamet and Jackson on several Sans Pants podcasts, namely Plumbing the Death Star, Baseless Speculation, and Thumb Cramps every single week. You can catch all these podcasts that I've been talking about, plus a bunch that I do, including Hey Fam and all the small games over at sanspantsradio.com. Thank you so much for listening. If this is your first episode of the all new, all different Serious Issues, there's years of the podcast that you can go back and listen to, or you can catch us back here next week for another episode with the three of us, and then future episodes with different guests in the future. But Jackson, Zamet, thank you so much for bringing this baby back to life.
Hey, any time. Just call me an Omega mutant that can terraform a podcast.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. If you want to hear more, just search for Serious Issues on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.